Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about things I would like to know, I should know, and really I must know about matter and the universe, the basic things around me. So this is another podcast. People will know that I will talk about experiences in the laboratory, filing through maths books and putting a story all together and really advancing on the story that had been given to me at school, the sort of common school story you get on the Discovery Channel and that type of stuff. I suppose the important thing to remember is that these presenters and teachers can only teach you what they understand, and if their understanding is limited, they're not about to say, look, my understanding is limited and here I'm giving you half your hamburger, or here's 30% of your serve chips. That they always present it. Ta-da! Yeah, even if stuff falls off the plate in the kitchen, they present you stuff. And so a lot of punters believe what they get at school and all that type of stuff is fully correct. Now, of course, it's slightly different if you have to go into the laboratory and write research papers and slowly grind through real world problems. And every once in a while, things come out so sharp and natural and work with the maths that you say, oh, look, there's some real stuff in that. So it's this ever-going process, which I'm sort of used to. It's sort of not suddenly the lightning struck me in the head and, oh, I've got to know this, I've got to do more maths. That's what you do in general. It's just the deeper questions that you ask, or as you replace one piece of fictitious diagram with the actual real stuff, you get a bit more insight and it leads you into more and more maths. So I'm going to get onto that then. So what I'm going to do in this episode is talk about the big problems, introduce you to the famous Professor Lisa, who I'm going to ask, give a little bit of my background as to, you know, once you understand the famous Professor Lisa in another country, you'll say, "Oh, you know, why is this process going?" And I think Professor Lisa, who might eventually listen to this, is why are these podcasts? What's this whole idea of podcasts? This is so unusual. We'll get into it, and then I'll get into the actual real problems. And you can switch off when I get into the problems I'm having with group theory. Don't worry, the moment I talk about group theory, people switch off and drive. So I won't have that till later on. So look, some of the more gobsmacking things, sort of understanding the shape of the universe and the symmetries in the universe and general relativity has been fairly interesting to understand. I suppose general relativity and learning about tenses and exactly how you write tenses and that type of stuff is very interesting. But the more sort of shocking stuff for me is understanding what fundamental particles are and decoding that. So fundamental actually means that it's got no smaller parts, and having no smaller parts saying, bugger off, you can't build a model that you're used to. It just has these fundamental properties. It's as if by magic. So if we would say, when physicists say this is a fundamental particle, it's saying it is a magical particle. It magically has angular momentum, like an electron has angular momentum and magnetic field, but there is no actual mechanism in our 3D or 4D maths that we teach you at school which can explain what's going on. So you get to that area, and then the magic doesn't stop there in terms of it just has the property and we can't explain it. This magic stuff continues, and you have the phenomena that your humble fridge magnet is twice as magnetic as the possible calculation of currents, the way that we can calculate it with our simple geometry is there, it's got an extra factor of 2. It's got a factor of 2 and a little bit. Now, the little bit is actually relatively easy to understand. So that's the overall quest. There's been sort of like 2 or 3 inroads saying, oh, God, you know, I'm going to have to understand. If I'm going to get any sort of balls into understanding rather than just hand waving, I've got to really understand this thing called group theory. I can sort of see how this part like an electron has been made at some stage and a sort of understanding of space. There's this thing in physics that there's a difference between a mathematical void space and actual physical, real universe space. Real universe space has a permittivity and permutivity. I can't pronounce the 2 different things. But essentially, it's got a springiness and a rotation-ishness that it can... It's got a rotation frame in it such that it can actually take light and can take a polarization of light and a twist and transmit it through. It is actually a medium. Space is a medium. And so some of that you can understand. Now, it's not all bad news as you get a full quantum mechanical explanation of the atom and a full understanding of space and a full understanding of, I'm not saying full as, gee, I'm great, I understand it. I understand enough to link the 2 together. I can link the dipole transition to an antenna to a transmission of a wave in space. So, and there is magic of fundamental particles, but it's not the magic that's in your school where they just say, if by magic the electron just goes up to this next thing and this wavy line comes out. So it's just turning the spotlight from the magic that they say, which is historic magic of big people who are big, fat and dead and you can't ask them questions, to here's computer simulations. You can actually see deep into it. And then there's this magic of the actual particle itself and the maths. And I'll just give a bit of a history into the dogged determination. So probably 21 or something like that, I saw a light transition in a gas discharge that's changed from a pink to a peachy colour. And I said, something in the back of my head said, you got to have to understand that. And then I kept on ramming up against these quantum mechanical books and supercomputer calculations, and eventually beating that thing, the crazy ideas that I was taught about the classical electron eventually fell out of my head. So it was this massive lifelong, and I didn't know where it would go. I just said, I've got to do it, and I kept on pushing and pushing, and eventually I lost classical physics, got into quantum physics. It was a hard, lonely, unstructured stuff, and eventually I crossed over into quantum physics, lost it, put it there, and that's a multi-year push. And it's sort of, again, I'm in this new area saying, gee whiz, why is the fridge magnet twice as strong as it should be? I'm going to find this out. And it's going to be tough, and I mightn't get there. I might actually reach the limit of my dumbness, which is there. So perhaps I'm so stupid I haven't actually realised the limit of my dumbness. But there are certain things that I say, I've read that sentence, I don't understand it. What don't I understand? Well, I actually don't understand what that term is in that sentence. So am I stupid? No, I just don't understand that. So that's where we're going to go, and we're going to talk a bit about the getting back more into more detailed motivation, more detailed description and different going around. Now we come up to the famous Professor Lisa. Hello, Lisa, in another country. Lisa is famous
famous in all the little villages and hamlets in Australia. They all know the legend of Lisa, who's made it big in mathematics. So, hi, and thanks for... I did a cheerio to check you're all okay with the coronavirus and stuff like that. Struck up a conversation, got a few papers to read, which I'm struggling through, and sort of an invitation on a different level to make videos. Look, you can hear the cockies in the background. Where I'm living, there's still a big gum tree. The cockies have got their little nest up the top there, and our house is completely surrounded with these complete, I don't know, they go up like a bonfire and a bushfire. They go right up, so our house is full of them. All the other properties have cleared them off. Now, we have the great advantage that these trees, which grow up and can burn like the bilio, their turpentine, so they've got not eucalyptus oil but turpentine oil, this molecular type of stuff, and the great thing is that they've got long big tap roots and they never fall down and they never drop branches, or there you go, it's going to drop a branch soon. So we've got lots of birds, but the cockies don't. The gum trees, which are a bit away from us, have the cockatoos. And I should also say, honey? Okay, just continuing a bit about birds for the moment. Occasionally in the drought, we had just a plague of these rosellas, and the rosellas would get quite aggressive and stand on my teacup and go in and drink the tea while I was holding it there, would land there and drink it, which is a bit of a thing because these are known as the most diseased. They're beautiful birds, people love them, but they are basically full of disease. And I think one Australian died from kissing it. It died, and the person kissed, and then the people... Oh, they didn't die. They got very sick. And they said... doctors were asking. So there you go, zoo fever. I should say that if you do come back to Australia, you should go to the aviary. There's an aviary up in Canberra, which is absolutely... They've got thousands of birds in this fairly small aviary, and then they give you some bird feed, and you just, it's sort of like the Hitchcock film. You get all these exotic birds going on you, and it absolutely terrifies the children. It is such a fun experience. But getting back to it, so I've been studying this bit of group theory, or trying to understand this bit of group theory, and been thrown a little bit of a lifeline, and there's sort of the level that I'm trying to understand, or the level that the lifeline I've been thrown is a little bit of a step up, but I will get there over the years. And so, why are you listening to a podcast? Well, about 2-3 years ago, I had heart operations, complete brain reset, lots of little mini strokes and stuff like that. Had to gradually learn to I can walk and all that type of stuff. I didn't realize how bad I was until I got better and had to socialize, learn to talk, obviously with no friends and anything like that. You got no one to talk to, to memorize things, to read an article. I would read an article, I would not be able to remember it. And so to read an article and force yourself to write about it afterwards several times a day. So sometimes I might produce 2-3 hours podcasts a day on different topics, and it's been a real trial, and that has evolved. So I should send there's a few documentaries on robotics. So I have built robotics, done some heavy heavy research, and I sort of started from the ground up. And I said, oh, I've got a podcast, and it was good therapy podcasting, but it was not good therapy of doing an hour podcast and then an hour trying to upload it to the internet. So I built a software system to allow me to pump it out, and I pump it out uniformly. And because I'm not interested in a huge audience or anything like that, I've just put it on one feed burner, and if anyone's interested, they can find it. So there's about 150 subscribers, around that level at the moment. Good luck to you. And the listeners know that I treat them sort of like with the standard respect for other human beings. I'm not sort of up myself or think they're down, or I've got nothing. I just go along, and sometimes there's topics that I have to talk about which are just intensely boring to them, and I sort of apologize. And so I've had to read through or try and struggle through a little bit of group theory, and that's that level. So that's that overall level. But behind that, I've said, the doctors have said, look mate, you're on your own. You'll have to do a bit of your own cognitive therapy. So I decided, look, I'll do a bit of electronics. And then having been trained in sort of strategize, sort of, oh, what electronics am I going to do? I can't do a stupid project because people are going to go, look, pity on you. So like if I did something which was, a cute light display, which, someone could buy in a shop anyway, much better. And I'd play with that. You're completely isolated. So I decided, look, what I'll do is I'll look at science, look at the areas which need the greatest. And there's a couple of experiments. I said, well, look, the big missing place is quantum physics experiments. I'll start to work on that. And pretty much the same spot I was with the electronics is where I'm with the group theory now. I was really just behind, but thank goodness the world has gone completely bananas in beautiful electronics, and I was able to complete this electronics. This is in this rehab zone, and produce the Einstein de Haas experiment, and these other experiments in which the Thompson's temperature profile experiment, all these things which really go, oh my shit, that's quantum physics. You have to say that's quantum physics. There's nothing else to it. You go, well, bugger me, it's quantum physics. And the sort of reason I did that, A, because it's interesting, B, it sort of made sense, and C, it should have taken years to have produced it. And thanks to, some basic problem solving and a bit of overkill. People don't make poor quality silicon. This is the advantage of silicon. It's all microsecond, fantastic, high current, just out of this world, high quality stuff. So it's gone ahead, but that's not necessarily due to me. It's due to just the high technology of society at the moment. They've got this self-credited cockatoo in the tree opposite. And they're okay. They're a bit crafty, these birds. They've got a bit of a personality to them. I don't know if you know the way that they look and walk there. And they're obviously conspicuous. They're not in camouflage or anything like that. Getting back to it. So that's the podcast. Oh, yeah. So I've built these projects, and then the next thing is, I'll try and write them up. And because every time I try, I find I've got more things to go. And I found writing research papers really, really difficult. One is because I'm bad at writing research papers. The paragraph structure, I would have a way of thinking which is actually not the paragraph structure. I realize it's not the paragraph structure. So the fundamental paragraph structure was, introduce an idea, state the idea, proof the idea, and link the idea, which is slightly different from what I was thinking of. You introduce an idea, counter idea, the argument between the two ideas and the options, like this complex, which most people write an essay for. I was trying to cram into each individual paragraph. It's just ridiculous. And so eventually, look, the long story short is I began writing software to help me write the paragraphs. Then as I wrote the paragraphs, I would then get that under control, but then it would start to guide the more complicated research. So look, on one aspect, I got onto doing short videos on bits and bobs. And so I'll give you a this is Professor Lisa, the famous Professor Lisa. I'll give you a short video a bit on group theory, and if you could do better, that'll be great. And the idea of this is that realizing that we're at the end of an era. There's schooling can't go on because we are teaching our students rubbish. So that's the end of the argument. It just can't go on. So we've got to get something more. And the problem is that we've got so much knowledge that in order to someone to read it and get everything, we've got these new objects coming into existence, the sort of Wikipedia communal thing. And so what I have idea is this sort of more loosely structured video Wikipedia page to give you a browse masterclass where the actual individual paragraphs can be reauthored. The problem is that people reauthor, they read something and the concept is through and they do that and you need all this. But if you have the individual blocks saying, here's a block and here's, you've got three alternatives and you can see which one's voted the maximum, you can go through. It's coming up then. Now, also writing, sort of connecting the podcasts and the... having written the software to do the podcast, I can then could easily, besides the podcast, I was getting Google AI thing to read text. And this is one of the things I had to do, is I had to write some text. I had to, because my brain would not pick up mistakes, I'd have to listen to it over and over again with different levels of Google reading to read it and to get it and to do it. And sometimes it would take sort of half a day to do a paragraph. There you go. But that being said, I can use that to start to do voice interactive social robots to actually teach quantum physics, which is, you know, what's this next generation? So I've got this next generation ideas of building social robots around to interactively find out what students know and craft what they know to fit the actual high-level stuff and ensure that the high-level stuff is not done. Because essentially an ignorant teacher back in 1800 is going to have a major effect, because if someone doesn't understand maths and they're going off to the Napoleonic War and they're going to die of plague anyway, it doesn't... rather bad, but it's not going to matter all that much. It does matter now, and we've got so the impact and the requirement is coming. So you, just on the outside, heuristically, you can say, well, there's a general thing going ahead, and people say, oh, look, there's no money in what you're doing, and no one's going to support you. You know, that's pretty much, that's why there's a lot more used car salesmen than artists, you know, because there's more of a buck in used cars, and you can imagine a used car salesman with a paintbrush that just produce rubbish and not get anything out of it. So there's horses for courses. So this is why I'm in the world of this long range stuff. Okay, well, let's get back into these fundamental particles and group theory. So this is the area. Now, reading these stuff, the papers given so far, it's these highly abstract, and I have to get across. There's some symbols I don't understand, cosets. It's just due to memory more than anything else like that. And also the worst thing is my printer splat cartridge is going out, so I can't print these things out. And when they blow around the deck in Britain, it's just hard to go through. And there's certain things like quotient groups with the forward and back slant. Oh, God. And I'm just going to say that those, the plus, multiply, dot, asterisk, plus and cross in a circle, plus and cross in a circle with power fields, either side of things. So look, if I can just digress for a really short moment, this is other areas of maths which I've been very successful in. Not that the big links, but I've been able to wire them into robots. So I have been able to, this is a totally other area of maths. This is change the power field around operators such that as equations, they tile together physically differently on a page. And that's really good for robotics. It allows you to do a lot of condensed, simple maths in a very short area, sort of like a cross, sort of like matrices on steroids. And it's very visual. Okay, you don't understand that? Join the club. I find it difficult to understand that. But it's interesting to see that cross in a circle with a number underneath that circle, so it's got a different power field across it. Then there's another area of maths which is converting IP addresses and logic into statements to allow you to build these advanced apps. I might send them to you. And so this is again combining a number and a thought such that it's sort of like the DNA of a thought, so it allows it to be structured. This is something that I've built. And again, it's taken, a few weeks to get the basic laws out, and they're just good enough laws, and then a year or so to actually build the programs for it to all write together. So, and this is... And all through this is that's come along, and then hard operation, sort of big reset, and then some of those skills sort of just vaguely in the mists, getting them up, going forward. So there's all this stuff in group theory to understand. Now, we get our fundamental particle. So this is where... if you walk into a physics department, they will not tell you this. They will still draw an atom with the little circles and the atoms around. And sort of like, it's sort of like if you meet me on the way to a physics department, I'll take you off to a cafe and say, look, this is what it's actually like. So the amazing thing is that the electron is actually physically bigger than the proton. And I hope you're not so into maths that electrons and protons don't mean to you. So classically, they said the proton is big, the electron's less mass, and so it's smaller, you would think. But this is not the case. The Schrödinger wave equation has a 1 and an m term for the scale of it. And so the size of something, there's two factors to the size of things. One is the containing field, and the other thing is the mass. So if it's massive and got a very small containing field, it's really small. So a proton is a femtometer across, and a electron is 52 meters radius. Also, it's 52 picometers. So let's put that into scale for you. An electron is 100 meters side to side, and a proton is a millimeter side to side. That is, the proton is heavier and also has got a massive force field pinching it into existence. Now, the electron, even though it is bigger, is fundamental. And let's start to talk about it. So it is fundamental. So it has angular momentum, which is, you know, your coin flipped, but there is no parts to it. It's got spin, but it actually physically doesn't spin. Because it's the most fundamental particle, you can't actually put a mark on it, because there's actually no physical... You can build something big and put a mark on it, but then that's not an accurate model. It actually doesn't rotate, can't rotate, and you can't actually have an actual model of it rotating, because it physically doesn't rotate. It doesn't have the physical symmetry. Like when I do a triangle and put marks on it, and rotation, I put actual numbers on that, so I can see it's actually not rotated. It's, you know, if I get a triangle and got the numbers 1, 2, 3 and rotate it, it physically isn't rotated. It's there. That's a different triangle. The symmetry is broken. So there's a bit of a sort of a standard problem that people get confused between the model and the real thing, and then this model like the real thing, and people lose, sort of just get a bit jaded and stuff like that. So the electron cannot spin. And in fact, atoms, say I've got an atom, and the electron's not going around. The electron's sitting there in space, and it will, one thing is if it's got things, parts of the equations which ultimately scale up and relate to something which we see as motion, but it's the fundamental stuff, it's the differential of it. And because, say, your fundamental electrons are big Gaussian, three-dimensional Gaussian thing, and it's the gradient, and the gradient is increasing, the electron is falling, every part of the electron is stationary and falling in to the nucleus at the same time. So the proton and the nucleus overlap each other in space. In fact, all electrons actually physically overlap themselves in space. They're orthogonal numbers. They are, electrons are numbers. Interesting thing is that if I do have an electron which I say magnetically is spinning, well, I can put a magnetic field on it and prove that it's spinning. What it is it to us looks as though it is completely stationary. If I had an ability, and I do have an ability to imagine the complex phase of it, it would have this rippling colour going through it, rotating with what we see as phase. So even though if I had a coffee cup and I said it's rotating because it's phase, a magnetic rotation of an electron is actually not spinning around the nucleus. Its phase is such... stuffing there. So I'm beginning to understand that, which is great. So I understand sort of the electron and further out, and I understand the quantum physics, the Schrodinger, it's the differential wave equations, and there's an eigenstate, and there's nothing sort of surprising about it. And I've got a far better understanding than most. Look, this is not a claim to fame one. It just simply because I've had to write computer simulations to get a quantum mechanical particle to go from an atom, say a photon or an electron coming out. In order to get it, well, photons differently, but for an electron, in order for it to get out, I've had to create a band of energies of particles, infinitely particles which are infinitely in space, and do the phase of them such they build up a particle, and that particle then moves across with the group velocity of that constructed wave. It's exactly the same as optical fiber stuff. And I was very fortunate, almost ideal career, to spend time building optical fiber devices and putting oscillations in optical fibers and actually constructing filters, you know. So I got a beautiful view of that. In fact, it probably I couldn't ask for a better education. And so there's this the thing of these electrons. The electrons actually can get huge size. So a crystal electron, a crystal, is just a multi. It's a molecule, or you could say an atom, a molecule, but it's got multiple nuclei in it, and they're regularly spaced, and the electron goes throughout the entire crystal. So in your silicon, all this maths get here. But getting back into it, the problem is that you read this, and they do the abstract group theory, and then they say, and quantum physicists can use it, and of course that obviously doesn't help us, because yes, we can use it, but we can't understand how this could possibly give you a clue into what's not happening. We are perfectly able to accept that there is some sort of topology inside there, but sort of looks like it's dark green. We don't know what's in it. Now, the electron itself has its angular momentum is in a different dimension from our physical model dimensions. It has no physical. A quark has no physical extent. It's got a field force around a quark, but it's physically, there's no grainy individual. It has no dot. There's no Kronecker delta. There's no infinite. As you go down, there's an infinite amount of it there. It's just not there. The electron is just an electric field and just a mass field around it, and it has these properties of SU2 symmetry. Now, the SU2 symmetry of an electron means that you have to rotate it twice to get back to your original rotation. You cannot physically rotate an electron. It's got the property of angular momentum. It's got the property of magnetic field, and it has the property of SU2 symmetry. But it doesn't have the physical. The electron itself will never be a model which you can teach going ahead. Now, what it means is that certain things that we do understand, that you get to make an electron, you get got to be some symmetry violation. There you go. And what the meaning of a symmetry violation. But if I get an electron and a positron, and a positron is an electron of reverse symmetry, and it's actually travelling backwards in time, and this is structured in such a way, I get the two together, and I push them two together, they at a certain point in time will be in a Planck's distance through each other, they'll come into each other, they will oscillate in space, untie each other, i.e. cancel, there'll be mass there, and the mass will go into the energy of the electric field, and it will create a dipole transition moment, which will produce two photons travelling in opposite directions. Gamma rays, and I suppose gamma rays, and they will travel out in space. Well, if I reverse this, so I'll be left with, if I freeze, I stop my YouTube, put it in a reverse video thing and then play it backwards, so you can do that. I have two photons coming in together like that, and two photons coming together, they will collide with some space, and they will have angular momentum. So amazingly, photons have a symmetry. This is light particles have a symmetry, and they have got a symmetry in the oscillation of the space. In fact, a matter particle is a stationary standing wave of oscillated matter, which can't decay. It's symmetry forbidden to decay. And so what someone has done is the thing that will allow it to decay, someone has scooped it off the table. People don't quite know how that's done. I think there's a bit of explanations about sort of like the soup kitchen of matter being production. People have been sort of recycling some of the antimatter and putting it back into the matter. Just a tiny fraction enough to explain the amount of matter here. There's a lot of things which we don't understand. So that leads on to dark matter, dark energy. A lot of the interesting thing, I suppose, is that one of the conclusions you can have from the search for dark matter, okay, I don't know if you've ever heard of this, is that perhaps dark matter isn't a particle. Perhaps there is some aspect of the symmetry of it that we haven't fully understood. Well, I think that's obvious. If it's got no particle interactions whatsoever, yet it's there, it may go. I just trying to fundamentally, all particles we have are locked into our universe with a symmetry of our universe having rotational symmetry. So we have our universe, we are translationally invariant, we're not rotationally invariant. That is, the faster I spin something up, the faster it will pull apart, and I can actually do that in any part of the universe. I can see what the absolute zero of rotation is. There's an absolute there. So the symmetry of the universe is broken, and we have the physical models in front of us of electrons, protons, anything you want to shake a stick at has the fact that en masse you can rotate it, but the actual individual particles itself can't rotate. And the inability for it to rotate seems somehow linked to the fact that the universe, you can rotate in the universe. It's sort of like the universe has decided to have this zero rotation by having these rotationless particles brought up from it. So there's sort of that deep symmetry aspect of it. So what's happening here is I have these, the fundamental aspect is that the papers start off with the abstract stuff, and at the end point sort of make a passing reference to these examples. And this really unusual stuff, the person who's actually understood the examples, or she physically see the examples, is looking back at this abstract stuff and saying, hang on, I would really like you to have started this paper with, given that we have these abstract things, along the lines that I'm thinking, given that we have these abstract things, how does this group theory explain it? Rather than the group theory can be used in the process of getting A to B in a particle. It's sort of like having road laws, and you can drive safely across the city, but you don't know what the actual meaning of the laws are, in terms I can't quite describe it. So that's where I'm at the moment, and I'm going through, and I'll read the various things. If I can just go in. I'll read the unitary articles. I'm beginning to look some of the things go into my head. So one of the things, the sort of basic group theory, sort of the basic thing for a group, it has to be have identity element. It's got to be associative. It's got to, what is it? Two elements have to produce a third. I've forgotten what the name of that is. And it's got to have an identity element. It's not. It's got to commute. Commutative. Now, what is Albion? It's not commute. It's associative. Look, I have to go back and think. So this is the memory going back. I do have these questions that I have in my head that there has to be one identity element. There can't be two identity elements. I can see the proof of that one. For every element in the group, there has to be a inverse. Okay, so immediately you say, oh, well, if a group, and this is really stupid, but if a group has an odd number of elements, if a group has an even number of elements, it must, therefore, one of the elements must be an inverse of itself. There you go, that's a simple proof. So if it's got an even number of elements, one pair of the elements must be a self-inverse, because that if one's a self-inverse, if it's you then are left with an even number of resulting elements, and then there can be half of those can be one and half can be the other inverse. I can see cosets. I suppose I do have a question in my head about the counting of how many elements can be their self-inverse, how many can be to the various power. So, say, R to the 3 and a triangle, or R to the 4 and a square is an identity element, or for other stuff. But how many of those elements can be to a power identity element? And what that essentially means in terms of counting through. So that's an interesting aspect of it. So given that, you can see where my memory is, and I'm just going to keep on pushing along. And what I'll do is I'll try and do a. No, one of the things, horrible things, is that you go onto the internet and you can see these people doing these beautiful talking heads or things where it's so beautifully presented and they can speak a lot better than I can. But that's not really the point. The point is to actually start fishing around, starting this thing, this structure, this large structure where you talk and actually replace things, and I will basically push myself through. It may take months, it may take a year to eventually get up to speed on group theory. Thanks a lot for listening. Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.